fact that they was gonna hunt this person down too, you know, over shooting Cecil. So they left. And they went north. And then they got up in there somewhere, and there's a rumor that the fellow went to Wisconsin, and another rumor that he went into the upper peninsula of the country in Michigan. So Uncle Bob decided he'd go into Michigan, and Billy went into Wisconsin. Well, Billy got rich in the dairy business. And they didn't find the fellow. They would have killed him. And Uncle Bob, he got richer raising potatoes up in Michigan. It was quite a story. I mean, how that they come out of Elliott County, out of ruin, and possibly walk or rode horses or something all the way. I mean, up into that country, right over that. Isn't that strange?
Those were the fiddlers that fell off the horse, his uncle.
I was showing him the stones.
Was he just murdered? I mean,
yeah,
for money?
Yeah,
or,
well, I think that... what he was meddling, I think, where he had no business. The woman, he was struck on her at the dance. And what I learned not too many years back, that he was courting this fellow's wife, and he waylaid him at the river, and the river was up. And he was swinging the mule across the river, and he shot him while he was in the water. And at first they thought he drowned, you know, but they discovered he'd been murdered. But I showed him the stones that Cecil had chiseled out when he was probably 16 years old.
Now that one should have been on tape.
I think I got it.
That was a good
stone. That was a good stone. Which stones? His
headstones? No, they was crook stones at the house. I've got two of them here with his initials cut in. You know, he was just a sort of artesian, you know. Had to be gifted, I mean, to chisel out the stones. And then he put his name in them, you know. And C.L. Frater was written on several stones, and I got one that's got C.L.F.R. part of the A.
I saw that around there.
Well, I mean, that was an uncle I never seen, but that fiddle was supposed to be the fiddle, so I don't know. I mean, it's just all kinds of
hanging in
there.
Yeah.
So your dad, reassembled it? Restored?
I don't know who did. I remember the fiddle coming apart again when before I played, and Daddy took it to Ashland. A fireman by the name of Clay Pennington put that fiddle back together. I remember that. And, well, maybe it was about the time I was learning to play fiddle.
When you were wearing the hole in the
front porch.
Sympathize with their problem.
Well, I think I told you that's part of fishing. Fishing and fiddling is just alike when it comes. You have to learn to lie, or you don't fiddle well. same thing with fishing.
Yeah, he used to fish all the time. Everybody want to know how big the fish were he caught. And I said, well, usually, you know, he didn't bring them home. He'd just tell me about it, you know, that they were. And so I got a board. I mean, I told him I was going to get a board. They got me these white work gloves and stuffed them with cotton. And I nailed them on each end of the board like this. And the caption under it read, "The one that got away."
You know, now the coal miners,
like the hole of fame in there.
They can go far away and fish, you know. Cherokee Lake, Real Foot, all of these places where they catch these big fish. Up here, Big Sandy, was a miner, asked me if I fished. I said, yeah. But I said, it's getting dangerous for me. I'm getting old. He said, oh, he said, you're afraid you fall in? I said, no, I'm afraid to get drowned. I said, the fish are pretty big, you know. I can't handle them. They pull me in. He said, how big are they? I said, well, some of them are 8 inches. He said, 8 inches? He said, that's not very big. I said, it is if you measure in between the eyes.
I used that on the radio program down here once. J.P. was fishing. And they had a jamboree down at WTCR. And so I went on down. And they were already on the air when I went in. And Ray Allen or whoever was around and said, "Well, here's Adam. Where's JP?" You know, I said, "Well, he's cleaning the fish that he caught. He'll be down a little later." And they said, "It's going to take him that long to clean it?" They said, "How many did he catch?" I said, "Just one." And they said, "It's going to take him that long to clean it?" This was all on the air, you know. And I said, "Yeah, it probably will." They said, "Well, how big was it?" I said, "Oh, I think about 8 inches." And they said, "8 inches? Is that a... That's not very big." I said, "Between the eyes?" Of course, you know, that went over pretty good on the radio. Because it was all impromptu.
You just fish along as you went.
I'll tell you all this. I got to tell this. Morley Evans was raised over to Hayward, Kentucky. He was a self-taught machinist and very good. And he was made dies and stuff for us at the brickyard. And anyway, he was telling me about a little pond out near Hayward that had some big fish in it. And I said, "Morley, you're lying. There's no big fish in that little old pond." And I said, "Just to prove it," I said, "they're in there." I said, "I can get them." And so Paul Stock, a friend of mine, had come from Florida. And he gave me some scales that he had brought back off, I think it was off of a tarpon fish. It was as big as the top of a teacup, the scales. And he also brought me a shark hook that I used on, I had an old town canoe, and I used it with an anchor line, you know, that I had to tie my canoe onto a bush or something, so I still fished in the river. I just hooked that hook around, and I threw a paddle up and take it loose, you know. But, oh, the hook, it was like 10 inches long, great big thing with a barb on it, like nobody's business. So I thinks, "Well, I'll stir Morley up." So I had these four tarpon scales, put them in the shirt pockets here, you see. I mean, they just had to stuff them down in there. And I was working in maintenance, die setter. So when I got to the shop, I took this shark hook out and put it up in the vise and had a big bastard file in it, filing that barb on that hook. And Morley, he come over and he had these machinist glasses kind of closing down, looking over the glasses down at the vise, you know. He found that hook and he said, "What are you doing, Jeep?" I said, "I'm sharpening this fish hook." "Fish hook?" "Well," he said, "that looks like a wrecking bar." I said, "No," I said, "it's a fish hook." "Looked," he said, "it is, ain't it?" He said, "What do you use for line?" I said, "Fly line." He said, "Where are you going to fish with?" I said, "Now, Morley, I thought you was lying about them big fish over there." But I said, "I almost got one of them over there. Holy water." He said, "You mean over at Hayward's?" I said, "Yeah." "Well," he said, "is the fish in there big enough to bite that hook?" I said, "Morley," I said, "listen. I said, I had him hooked, but I said, my hook was dull, and I couldn't set it." And he said, "How big was he?" I said, "It's unknown how big he was." I said, "I've got some scales off of him big enough to write a postcard home." He said, "I don't believe it." So I pulled these out, and he opened like a deck of cards, and he had Parkinson's. So he was a little bit, you know. He took them to show them to our boss, and he said, "Look at here." He said, "Now, buddy," he said, "I told you they were big fish in that box." I guess he died thinking that I had honestly knocked the scales off that fish with that shark hook at Hayward. Now that'd have been real good. We got a picture.
Yeah, that little teacup. Here you are. There you go.
All right. Now the tune that Andy and I just played was a version of New Money that I learned when I was quite young. I'm now close to 62. But when I was growing up, my father run an amusement park at Hitchens, Kentucky. 4 miles from Grayson. Hitchens was in Leon, Kentucky, was a railhead for Grayson. Grayson never had a railroad. So the circuses and carnivals would come into Hitchens and they would play there with their wagons, and they would have very good musicians. And this was also the period of time that what we call the Negro minstrels were going on. We could get to see those. We'd get to see the vaudeville shows. And they would have excellent musicians with them. And Frank Clay played New Money. But somehow it didn't impress me until I heard a fiddler with a carnival that belonged to a person by the name of Cat Latlin from Cincinnati, Ohio. He brought this carnival in there with me and his orchestra. And this guy fascinated me with his version of New Money. And I could never, the reason I didn't like the earlier version, or the version that I heard before, was seemingly it had a strange rhythm and you couldn't dance to it. And the fiddler, I remember him telling my father that that version of New Money was black music. Mm-hmm. He told me, he said on the course, he said it was almost, could cause a Negro to shuffle, you know, the shuffled actions of Negro's head. You could almost see it, you know. But that had stuck in my mind. I'd almost forgotten it till I heard some young people playing their version of New Money, which is different. Mm-hmm. And the high part, or what we call the fine part, it was similar to what I played. So I just started back of playing that version. All right.
You were worrying with that tune when we were up here in 1977.
Yeah, yeah.
That must have been about the time when you were worrying with it.
Well, just take from then back until I was just a youngster.
Yeah.
It's just like I could get away. Well, for instance, what happened, while I'm thinking about it, if I can get it going, I'll play you a little bit of the Blackberry Blossom, the way I learned it. And then I finally learned later why it was called the Garfield Blackberry Blossom.
President Garfield.
Yeah. Well, he was General Garfield at the time.
Hmm.
He played the fiddle, and that version they called the Garfield Blackberry Blossom. And it is different than the Blackberry Blossom that we normally play. The origin of the what I call the new Blackberry Blossom, I don't really know where it come from. Maybe it came from out west, maybe not, I don't know. I prefer even the sounds of the Garfield Blackberry Blossom, because it was so indicative of the type of fiddle that they used to play in Appalachia. They have what they call dwelling notes in the tuning. The relativity of the Garfield Blackberry Blossom to Wild Rose of the Mountain is also quite obvious. But the Wild Rose is played in a different chord, in A, and the Garfield Blackberry Blossom is played in G.
Well, how about playing it?
All right.
Okay. never sure in the second part whether you go to be on that or not, so I just told him to read it.
That's quite a contrast to the blackberry blossom that most of us or most people nowadays are familiar with. I just don't know. Maybe it's because, of course, bluegrass had a lot to do with the blackberry blossom that we listen to today. Played the drive, basically. There's no level thing. Straight.
Oh, no. It's nerve-wracking to me.
Yeah.
It is frenzied.
I admire the flat pick, and I really like that in bluegrass. But 20 minutes of it, of all of it, I mean, and I'm ready to go someplace.
Yeah. Well, it's according to who's doing it.
Yeah, now I like
back
the Country
when,
Gentleman.
The Country Gentleman did great with it. Don Reno, Red Smiley, Tennessee Cut-Up. Those people, it was a different.
I guess
it was, maybe it was bordering, still bordering a little bit on the country or old time. But
country.
Now, I mean, really get great in bluegrass. It's the appearance, the attack on the tune. And my theory is you've got to learn to sing through your nostrils, preferably the left nostril. If you can do that, you've got to.
Well, I think the reason I like the Country Gentlemen, they went to the Library of Congress and got old songs and did this harmony on them and so forth, you know, which made it a little bit different from what the majority of the bluegrassers were doing. So I kind of enjoyed that.
They were presenting something that had been preserved through experience.
Yeah.
And drawing on that. Mm-hmm. That's what back to the settling that replaces side A of Jackie's album.
Well, that John Beckett, he was a gifted person too. I mean, taking the old folk tunes, we might call them, out of the archives of Smithsonian. And
they did things like I Never Were Married, Fair and Tender Ladies, which I did, different things like that.
I think some of that with a younger fiddler, more inexperienced, not necessarily the age of the fiddler, but the time that the person's been playing with this music, some of it's just lack of maturity.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it never will happen with some people that they develop that individual feeling for. I see it as a lack of experience or immaturity in listening, or something has to happen over time. You can't just go in and turn on a light and say, this is the way I'm going to play my fiddle. It just doesn't happen.
But don't you feel that the individualists have come from people that have played since they were children or something and didn't just all at once decide to learn to play? And so the only way they had of learning was to learn from other people through records or something of that order, and that was why they developed styles of other people rather than their own.
Mm-hmm.
But if people kind of grew up playing, or had that natural talent, well, they're the ones that seem to have their individual style.
Some people have it, and some people can get it. Other people never have it. It's kind of an observation. Mm-hmm. You can take one person and give them a fiddle, and take another person and give them a fiddle, and you're going to have something very different in another 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
I wish we had some real, real early tapes of your music.
I don't know.
How early?
I'm thinking about those early radio. Was any of that ever too
early?
Kind of
never.
Kimba Rogers might have had a few.
But, you know.
We have some early American Folk Song Festival tapes.
Yeah.
Or a WLW documentary that was done. Got the soundtrack on it. And that was like in 62 or 63, something like that.
Yeah, you might say.
But we have 20
years
ago,
so then we would be hearing a 40-year-old musician, different from 20-year-olds like those two fellows.
Right.
Well, it's according to what happens to you. I mean, there's a lot of playing that we should have done that we didn't do, especially when we were married, first married, raising babies. There's 14 years we didn't touch a string.
We did occasionally. I know we say that, but we didn't feel like it did.
Two or three times.
When Willard and Shannon would come around, and Willard would ask you to play Birdie,
Well, yeah, and then it was so hard for me to play. I mean,
and so it would be like maybe once a year or something like that with borrowed instruments. Well, he still had his fiddle. I didn't have his guitar.
Yeah, but it wasn't really in playing.
But I mean, just in a living room, you know.
For playing. Didn't really. Of course, always, any musician would love playing for Willie. I guess drank a little too much wine. He'd come around to the house. He's never loud or anything, but he'd come in and say, JP said, would you get the fiddle and play birdie for me?
Yeah.
Well, he did, but you know, I was teetotally out of practice, couldn't hardly play at all. But he would sit and pat his foot and cry. I think, well, you'll never get audience like that.
We'd play a couple more tunes then and say, well, you play two more tunes, now play your birdie again
play
for
birdie
us.
And he would leave, I mean, he'd leave.
But see, you had that time that your music was incubating somewhere.
Well, probably.
You know, you could say that it was there and it wouldn't come back to it. You had a different approach to it.
Well, I knew when I started playing again, I would pick up on tunes that I'd played, you know, years and years before. And think, boy, how come I remember that or something? Now, what's something else you might want to hear?
It's your choice.
Fiddler's choice.
A fiddler's choice.
What about whiskey before breakfast?
All right. What about that sentence?
Well, I
had more trouble working out the first phrase on the fine part on this, and I'm still not satisfied with what I've got, but it fits with the time, so I just leave it alone.
Right.
Every time I go past it, I think, I'm going to do something else to say it.
Nothing
else has happened, but I'm planning to do something else.
That's what I call fiddling. I mean, it's when you do your own thing with the tune. Well, you'll notice, probably notice when I play Whiskey Before Breakfast. Or it's a smooth way of playing the tune. St. Anne's Reel, they're my own, just, I guess, what I feel the way that they should be. And a lot of it is reflects back to the fiddlers that I heard when I was growing up. Now, I heard the good and the bad. A lot of people, somehow or another, the old-time fiddler got satirized as a fiddler that couldn't play very well, or he didn't have any tone quality, he didn't have good rhythm. Well, that's far from being a fact, because the good fiddlers, Lord, they played in the church, they played everywhere, but they were fiddlers that, normally they didn't read music, some of them did. But it was easy on the ear, not foot stomping fiddle, but foot patting, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
When you get through listening to them for 2 or 3 hours, you go home and whistle, trying to whistle a fiddle to them. It made a difference. I'll try to give you an idea of my version of Whiskey Before Breakfast.
Thank you.
too.
You're going to tell a good story, I know.
And, somebody was telling me about Joe Green and Kenny Baker at a festival. Anyway, Joe had been down there playing some fiddle tune for some young bluegrass pickers, you know. He come back up to where Kenny was, talking to him, Joe Green and Kenny Baker. Well, Kenny Baker to me is the finest bluegrass fiddler ever I heard. And Joe Green was a fine fiddler. In fact, matter, they recorded together, both of them twin fiddles. But when he come back, Kenny said, "Where you been?" He said, "Down there playing for them kids." Put it in the vernacular. The way he said, "Have you played for them?" He said, "Damn," I said, "I'm not going down there and play for them kids." He said, "They pick it up too quick." He said, "You play them the tunes in 5 minutes," and they'll play it back to you. About the truth. We'll steal his stuff.
There was somebody that does Bob Dylan songs wanting to be looked in on the festival.
For the revival you're organizing?
He understood it and I explained it to him.
You mean the American folks?
It never hurts to ask.
No.
Lordy, I can't. It's funny how your mind will go blank.
Yeah, like Katie Hill.
No.
I knew he wouldn't. I just thought I'd throw that in.
I think everybody's got a fiddle. We're playing Katie Hill.
What I've tried to learn to do is to always ask for things he won't play, so he'll play something that I would like for him to play.
It's a salesman technique when they ask you, do you want the red one or the blue one? And you may not want either one, but when they get you in that position, then you start to wonder, well, do I want the red one or the blue one?
So you take one of them.
You want to play Sally Johnson or Katie Hill, you know?
There you go. Play one.
It took me forever to catch on to them.
What about Cotton Patch is another black tune, southern tune, and it's sort of like ragtime rhythm. If you nowadays when you hear it, you're going to hear back to the Texas version of the Cotton Patch Rag. But what happened, of course, the Texans, they play it as a rag tune. But a lot of fiddlers, I don't think they differentiate or know the difference between a hoedown, a hornpipe, a jig, a reel, or what. Did they play them? They all sound like them, maybe to me like a hoedown.
Yeah.
And there's no difference. If I can get this back gum cotton patch in my mind now. It's awful easy to confuse when you're playing, like I Don't Love Nobody or New Money, things that order, because all of that is black music. And if you're not real careful, you'll get started on the wrong tune, which I'll probably do. Thank you.
We kind of lost it.
Well, what I was trying to do was give an idea of the black rag rhythm. I mean, that's what it is.
The rain hurt that over there, those things?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it is raining.
Yeah.
I mean, it's drifting along.
It is
drifting away.
Huh. Now, wait. What I want to do is do the Lost Indian.
Oh, good.
This is Poppy's version of the Lost Indian. But there's a lot of stuff in it I don't do. I mean, I never did sit to learn it. I didn't really like it. That is where you make the squalls and stuff on the fiddle. Sounds kind of weird to me. But nowadays, when I hear the Lost Indian, they're playing. What's that little song that Hubert used to sing back to his hole he went? And they play it that way. I mean, about the mouse coming out of his hiding place and drinking the gin. And that is a sort of a traditional folk song. But the Lost Indian, the pattern is pretty close to that. But anyway, this is the version of the Lost Indian that I grew up with. Let's do St. Andrea.
Yeah.
I'll learn eventually.
Years ago, I worked up in Canada. And I'd hear this St. Andrea. And of course, they played it around home, too. But nowadays, when you hear it, it's a little, I guess it's a style that they must have picked up from the record or something. But here, and up around Heartland and River des Chutes and New Brunswick, the way you would hear it, St. Andrea. The same thing also happened to a tune that you hear pretty well now in the traditional music, is Over the Waterfall. that too. Mm-hmm. Well, I know a lot of times when I play it, people will stop and they'll listen, because it's a kind of a lilting tune, the way I learned it. It's not as harsh as you might hear. I'm about to go back on this 8 a.m.
You lost your music.
I lost my music.
Woke up in the middle of the night and it's still going. Go back to sleep and wake up the day and it's still going. That's why I frown when I hear Over the Waterfall.
Don't like it till I guess you've been out of
it. We were with him several weekends ago because he was the main show player we wanted to be with. I was the band about laughing. Woke up at 2 and they were still dancing. I got up and combed my hair and went down and danced for another 2 hours. They were doing really hard dances. They'd done all the easy ones.
Yeah, I crawled out at 2 o'clock in the morning, get my guitar and go join a group someplace.
What about Little Beggar Man?
Oh, I'd love to hear that.
Well, it's a red-haired boy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Let's try it. I'm telling you, I'm having all the time there was.
It might be real interesting to be at a festival like Townsend where there would be other fiddlers that come out of a vastly different style, and if they would, you know, they might play something that, like Little Beggar Man or Red Hood Boy, play that tune, but out of their style of playing. I bet that was fun.
It happened.
Yeah, they had good style, smaller.
Well, you might as well say there's 25 different styles. I mean, right there. Was playing. I mean, Of course, Franklin George, he was there for me with his style of playing. He's got a lot of, I guess, Scottish influence.
Of course, the one that was there that they didn't really take to was the fellow with the swing fiddle was electrified.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a lot of people.
But it was a style of fiddle.
He carried a wallop. I mean, there's a player. What was his name?
I don't remember.
He's pretty popular. I read about him yet, occasionally. He's a black man. Played
he
blues
really
fiddle.
Play that, I tell you, blues.
And he's like a snake. I mean, if you go down here starting a blue note and you start wiggling, that fiddle seems like it'd be up here in the air that high by the time he gets there. It's interesting to watch him. Well, let's see. Now, we played Irish and black, and I don't know.
You know your white tunes?
Yeah. Yeah. I know some white tunes. What about a waltz?
Any
waltz? I'll house this up. We'll put Shannon Waltz on there. Why does that seem like I can't get into? I don't think she likes the high notes, mate.
Well, that part I'm
not sure. When you playing fiddle, you don't really know what you're doing. I mean, it's unorthodox. You play, your finger position would probably be altogether different playing violin, you know. You just, like I always like to say, I don't play by note, I play by letter. I just let her go. Wherever you wind up, that's where you are. And everybody's got to be somewhere.
And I play by ear. And I don't always, my ear's not always working right.
Her ears get sore.
Do you think it has anything to do with the hours over the waterfall while you're
could
sleeping?
Could be. Well, a friend of ours goes with us down there a lot, and 1 year it was Golden Slippers. So every time that we start to play Golden Slippers, we'll say, this is Mama's favorite tune. Oh, she leaves the room.
Oh, well, we'll do a little bit of the fork and beer. I don't know where I can even touch it or not.
It hurts really. Happy.
We wouldn't go over that again.
Got caught, his antlers got caught in the fence.
Anyway, he put hung in the fence. I told you, it's like playing by letter. Original English fiddle tune that we've got in America today is a forked deer. Another tune that's pretty popular with fiddlers, they all learn it, is the Soldier's Joy. Mm-hmm. Originally it was a quadrille, and it come from France, and called French Four. Went to England. Fiddlers called it King's Head. And it was called King's Head until it got to America, and even here. And then it became a marching tune for the soldiers. And that's when it got the moniker or the name Soldier's Joy. And my version, listening to some of the tunes, is kind of relative to the French fiddle. Dane's called a quadrille. Let's try a little bit of it. I don't know. I guess it's fiddler's choice. I could do what I want to get it.
They're a nice tune to play when there are a lot of people around.
Because they're happy.
Everybody's
happy to.
It's hard not to join in on that tune. It's hard not to go on. Although one time I think I played it 20 times in one day and I didn't play it at all.
Yeah, you get a little tired.
What about Anna Marie's jig?
Well, let's hear Anna Marie's jig.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what. I'm trying to think it. We got to do that over. Back that thing up. I can't even do that on there. I'm going to play it over. Now quit doing that.
What you did I do?
Let me sit here mind my own business. That's the endless song. There's never any place to.
Well,
you can just go on.
You're right.
On.
You can't. Not with the jig.
The jig. How do they do? Slowly burning.
I mean, I finished a song once when a photographer fell out of a window. So he surely could have done that.
All right, let's try that little bit of that. Well, I hope he's got his wheels up.
It's down at the Shaker Village. We were in one of these rooms playing. And he was every place taking pictures. And he climbed up in the window to get a better shot. And I was singing something, Banks of Red Rose or something. And he fell out. And I didn't know whether to continue or to stop, and I decided it would embarrass him so much if I stopped, so I went ahead and finished it.
Was it a high window? Was it a high window? Was he?
Oh, no, it's coming out like this. But he felt it. It's a small room, you know, so it made a big noise.
Seems like I keep climbing on the tune. Hit A. All right, let's do a little bit of Sally Gooden. I don't. This is a tune I like real well.
Thank you.
For those slides.
I sell a good
It's got to cut it out.
I'll take a chance on falling down here.
It lets you fall out the window there.
It's an ice cream. It's got a kind of a lonesome sound.
Yeah, that little minor part.
I mean, that my version of it, it's not choppy. In Cripple Creek from Sally Gooden. They're kind of pretty and real simple. It's complicated.
Just a minute, let me see.